The wagon started with a jerk. We were off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Arse. What was it Hagbard had said to me the first time we met about straight lines, courtrooms and shit? I couldn't remember. My mind drifted. Joseph K. opening the law books and finding pornographic illustrations. Kafka knew where it was at. Desaad keeping a precise mathematical tally in the brothel. How many times he flogged the whores? How many times they flogged him? The Nazis counting every gold filling in the corpses at Auschwitz. Shakespeare scholars debating about that line in Macbeth. Was it benches or banks of time? The prisoner may approach the bench. You can bank on it, buddy, bank on it. Pigs eat shit, and Pound wrote The Buggering Bank. He rejected Freud, but even so he got a whiff of the real secret. How one homo ominously loopses another.
My God, the Englishman said. When do we get out of the tear gas area?
We're out of it, I told him wearily.
That's regular Chicago air now, courtesy of Commonwealth Edison and U.S. Steel over in Gary.
The McCarthy woman was weeping quietly, although the mace had worn off by now. The rest of us rode silently, a little caravan of dried snot and tears. The parmesan cheese odour of stale vomit. Some lingering acrid mace fumes. The urine of somebody who had peed himself. And that high sulphur dioxide and slaughterhouse aroma of Chicago's south side. The quality of mercy is very strained. It drippeth like the pus from canker.
Abandon hope, all ye who enter here.
Chairman Mao appeared and lectured us.
Haw! Is just a poetasta. Now, if you want to hear some real socialist verse, consider my latest composition. There was a young lady from Queens who gobbled a plateful of beans. The beans fermented, and she was tormented by embarrassing sounds in her jeans. Indicates the anal orientation of capitalist society.
He explained, dwindling into a pool of blood on the floor next to the kid with the broken arm.
In 1923, Adolf Hitler stood beneath a pyramidal altar and repeated the words of a goat-headed man.
Der Zweck heiligter die Mittel.
James Joyce in Paris scrawled in crayon words that his secretary Samuel Beckett would later type.
Pre-hysteric man in pursuit of pan-hysteric woman.
In Brooklyn, New York, Howard Phillips Lovecraft, returning from a party at which Hart Crane had been perfectly beastly, thereby confirming Mr. Lovecraft's prejudice against homosexuals, finds a letter in his mailbox and reads with some amusement, "Some of the secrets revealed in your recent stories would be better kept out of the light of print. Believe me, I speak as a friend, but there are those who would prefer such half-forgotten lore to remain in its present obscurity. And they are formidable enemies for any man. Remember what happened to Ambrose Bierce."
And in Boston, Robert Putney Drake screams,
"Lies, lies, lies, it's all lies. Nobody tells the truth. Nobody says what he thinks."
His voice trails off.
"Go on,"
Dr. Bezetson says.
"You were doing fine. Don't stop."
"What's the use?"
Drake replies, drained of anger, turning on the couch to look at the psychiatrist.
"To you, this is just abreaction, or acting out, or something clinical. You can't believe I'm right."
"Perhaps I can. Perhaps I agree more than you realize."
The doctor looks up from his pad and meets Drake's eyes.
"Are you sure you're not just assuming I'll react like everybody else you've tried to tell this to?"
"If you agreed with me,"
Drake says carefully,
"if you understood what I'm really saying, you'd either be the head of a bank out there in the jungle with my father grabbing your own share of the loot, or you'd be a bomb-throwing revolutionary like those Sacco and Vanzetti fellows. Those are the only choices that make sense."
"The only choices? One must go to one extreme or the other?"
Drake looks back at the ceiling and talks abstractly.
You had to get an M.D. long ago before you specialized. Do you know any case where germs gave up and went away because the man they were destroying had a noble character or sweet sentiments? Did the tuberculosis bacilli leave John Keats's lungs because he had a few hundred great poems still unwritten inside him? You must have read some history, even if you were never at the front lines, like me. Do you recall any battle that refutes Napoleon's aphorism about God always being on the side of the biggest cannons and the best tacticians? This Bolshevik Russia Lenin, he's ordered the schools to teach chess to everybody. And you know why? He says that chess teaches the lesson that revolutionaries must learn. That if you don't mobilize your forces properly, you lose. No matter how high your morality, no matter how lofty your goal, fight without mercy, use every ounce of intelligence, or you lose. My father understands that. The people who run the world have always understood it. A general who doesn't understand it gets broken back to second lieutenant or worse. I saw a whole platoon wiped out, exterminated like an anthill under a boot, not because they were immoral or naughty or didn't believe in Jesus, because at that place on that day, the Germans had superior firepower. That's the law, the one true law of the universe, and everything that contradicts it, everything they teach in schools and churches, is a lie.
He says the word listlessly now.
Just a lie.
If you really believe that,
the doctor asks,
why do you still have the nightmares and the insomnia?
Drake's blue eyes stare at the ceiling.
I don't know,
he says finally.
That's why I'm here.
Moon! Simon!
The desk sergeant called. I stepped forward, seeing myself through his eyes. Beard, army surplus clothes, stains all over, my own mucus, somebody else's vomit. The archetypal, filthy, dirty, disgusting, hippie commie revolutionary.
Well,
he said,
another bright red rose.
I usually look neater,
I told him calmly.
You get a bit messed over when you're arrested in this town.
The only way you get arrested in this town,
he said, frowning,
if you break the law.
The only way you get arrested in Russia is if you break the laws,
I replied cheerfully.
Or by mistake,
I added. That didn't set well at all.
Wise guy,
he said gently.
We like wise guys here.
He consulted my charge slip.
Nice record for one night, Moon. Rioting, mob action, assaulting an officer, resisting arrest, disturbing the peace. Nice.
I wasn't disturbing the peace,
I said.
I was disturbing the war.
I stole that one-liner from Ammon Hennessy, a Catholic anarchist that Mom was always quoting.
The rest of the charges are all bullshit, too.
Say, I know you,
he said suddenly.
You're Tim Moon's son. Well, well, well. Second-generation anarchist. I guess we'll be locking you up as often as we locked him up.
I guess so,
I said.
At least until the revolution. Afterward, we won't be locking you up, though. We're going to establish nice camps in places like Wisconsin and send you there free to learn a useful trade. We believe that all policemen and politicians can be rehabilitated. But if you don't want to go to the camp and learn a productive trade, you don't have to. You can live on welfare.
Well, well, well,
he said.
Just like your old man. I suppose if I looked the other way while some of the boys took you in the back and worked you over a bit, you'd come out still making wisecracks.
I'm afraid so.
I smiled.
Irish national character, you know. We see the funny side of everything.
Well,
he said thoughtfully. He was awfully fond of that word, well.
I hope you can see the funny side of what comes next. You're going to be arraigned before Judge Bushman. You'll find yourself wishing you'd fallen into a buzzsaw instead. I give my regards to your father. Tell him Jim O'Malley says hello.
He's dead,
I said. He looked down at his charge slips.
Sorry to hear it,
he mumbled.
Nanetti! Fred!
He bawled, and the kid with the broken arm came forward. A patrolman led me to the fingerprint room. This guy was a computer.
Right hand?
I gave him my right hand.
Left hand?
I gave him my left hand.
Follow the officer.
I followed the officer, and they took my picture. We went down some halls to the night court, and in a lonely section the patrolman suddenly hit me in the lower back with his club. The exact spot, he knew his business, to give me liver problems for a month. I grunted, but refused to say anything that would set him off and give me another clout. So he spoke.
Yellow-bellied faggot, he said. Just like Biloxi, Mississippi. One cop is nice, another is just impersonal. A third is a mean bastard. And it doesn't really matter. They're all part of the same machine. And what comes out the end of the gears and levers is the same product, whatever their attitude is. I'm sure Buchenwald was the same. Some of the guards tried to be as humane as possible. Some of them just did their job. Some of them went out of their way to make it worse for the prisoners. It doesn't matter. The machine produces the effect it was designed for. Judge Bushman, we slipped him Alm 2 years later, but that's another story coming up on another trip, gave me his famous King Kong scowl.
Here are the rules,
he said.
This is an arraignment. You can enter a plea or stand mute. If you enter a plea, you retain the right to change it at your trial. When I set bond, you can be released by paying 10% to the bailiff. Cash only, no checks. If you don't have the cash, you go to jail overnight. You people have the city tied up in knots, and the bail bondsmen are too busy to cover every courtroom, so by sheer bad luck, you landed in a courtroom they're not covering.
He turned to the bailiff.
Charge seat,
he said. He read the record of my criminal career as concocted by the arresting officer.
5 offenses in 1 night. You're bad medicine, aren't you, Moon? Trial set for September 15th. Bail will be $10,000. Do you have $1,000?
No.
I told him, wondering how many times he'd made that speech tonight.
Just a moment,
said Hagbard, materializing out of a hallway.
I can make bail for this man.
Mr. Karras.
Does Mr. Chalene seriously suggest the United States government is in need of a guardian?
Mr. Chalene.
I'm merely offering a way out for your client. Any private individual with a record of such incessant murder and robbery will be glad to cop an insanity plea. Do you insist that your client was in full possession of its reason at Wounded Knee, at Hiroshima, at Dresden?
Justice Imhotep.
You become facetious, Mr. Chalene.
Mr. Chalene.
I have never been more serious.
What is your relationship to this young man?
Bushman asked angrily. He had been about to come when the cop dragged me off to jail, and he was strangling in some kind of gruesome SM equivalent of coitus interruptus.
He's my wife,
Hagbard said calmly.
What?
Common law wife,
Hagbard went on.
Homosexual marriage is not recognized in Illinois, but homosexuality per se isn't a crime in this state either. So don't try to make waves, Your Honor. Let me pay and take him home.
It was too much.
Daddy,
I said, camping like our friend the Padre.
You're so masterful.
Judge Bushman looked like he wanted to lay Hagbard out with a gavel upside of his head, but he controlled himself.
Count the money,
he told the bailiff.
Make sure he pays every penny, and then,
he told us,
I want the two of you out of this courtroom as quickly as possible. I'll see you September 15th,
he added to me. Mr. Karras.
And we believe we've demonstrated the necessity of this dam. We believe we've shown that the doctrine of eminent domain is on sure constitutional grounds and has been held to apply in numerous similar cases. We believe we have shown the resettlement plan offered by the government will be no hardship for the plaintiffs.
Fucking faggots,
the cop said as we went out the door.
All hail Discordier,
I told him cheerfully.
Let's get out of this neighborhood,
I added to Hagbard.
My car is right here,
he said, pointing to a goddamn Mercedes.
For an anarchist, you sure live a lot like a capitalist,
I commented as we got into that beautiful machine crystallized out of stolen labor and surplus value.
I'm not a masochist,
Hagbard replied.
The world makes me uncomfortable enough. I see no reason to make myself more uncomfortable. And I'm damned if I'll drive a broken-down jalopy that spends half its time in a garage being repaired merely because that would make me seem more dedicated to you left-wing simpletons. Besides,
he added practically,
the police never stop a Mercedes and search it. How many times a week do you get stopped and harassed with your beard and your psychedelic slaves wagon, you damn moralist?
Often enough,
I admitted,
that I'm afraid to transport dope in it.
This car is full of dope,
he said blithely.
I'm making a big delivery to a dealer up in Evanston on the Northwestern campus tomorrow.
You're in the dope business, too?
I'm in every illegal business. Every time a government declares something verboten, two groups move in to service the black market created, the Mafia and the LDD. That stands for Lawless Delicacy Dealers.
I thought it stood for Little Deluded Dupes.
He laughed.
Score one for Moon. Seriously, I'm the worst enemy governments have, and the best protection for the average person. The Mafia has no ethics, you know. If it wasn't for my group and years of experience, everything on the black market, from dope to Canadian furs, would be shoddy and unreliable. We always give the customer his or her money's worth. Half the dope you sell probably has passed through my agents on its way to you. The better half.
What was that homosexual business? Just bugging old Bushman?
Entropy. Breaking the straight line into a curveball.
Hagbard,
I said,
what the hell is your game?
Proving that government is a hallucination in the minds of governors,
he said crisply. We turned onto Lakeshore Drive and sped north.
Thou, Jubella, did he tell you the word?
Asked the goat-headed man. The gigantic black said,
I beat him and tortured him, but he would not reveal the word.
Thou, Jubello, did he tell you the word?
The fish-like creature said,
I tormented and vexed his inner spirit, master, but he would not reveal the word. And thou, Jubellum, did he tell you the word?
The hunchback dwarf said,
I cut off his testicles and he was mute. I cut off his penis and he was mute. He did not tell me the word.
A fanatic,
the goathead said.
It is better that he is dead.
Saul Goodman tried to move. He couldn't twitch a single muscle. That last drug had been a narcotic, and a powerful one. Or was it a poison? He tried to assure himself that the reason he was paralyzed and laying in a coffin was because they were trying to break down his mind. But he wondered if the dead might tell themselves similar fables as they struggled to escape from the body before it rotted. As he wondered, the goat head leaned over and closed the top of the coffin. Saul was alone in darkness.
Leave first, Jubella.
Yes, master.
Leave next, Jubello. Yes, master. Leave last, Jubellum.
Yes, master.
Silence. It was lonely and dark in the coffin, and Saul couldn't move. Let me not go mad, he thought.
Howard spotted the Leif Erikson ahead and sang,
Oh, groovy, groovy, groovy scene, once again I'll meet Chalene.
Maldonado Sleek Bentley edged up the drive to the home of America's best-known financier, philanthropist, Robert Putney Drake.
Louis marched toward the Red Widow, maintaining his dignity.
An old man in a strange robe pushed to the front of the crowd, trembling with exultation. The blade rose. The mob sucked in its breath. The old man tried to look into Louis's eyes, but the king could not focus them. The blade fell, the crowd exhaled, as the head rolled into the basket. The old man raised his eyes in ecstasy and cried out,
Jacques de Molay, thou art avenged!
Professor Glynn lectured his class on medieval history. Dean Dean was issuing the strawberry statement on the same campus at the same time, and said,
The real crime of the Templars, however, was probably their association with the Hashishim.
George Dorn, hardly listening, wondered if he should join Mark Rudd and the others who wanted to close down Columbia entirely.
And modern novels are the same,
Smiling Jim went on.
Sex, 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 and not normal sex even. Every type of perverted, degenerate, unnatural, filthy, deviated, and sick kind of sex. This is how they're gonna bury us, as Mr. Khrushchev said, without even firing a shot.